Picard turned back to the big window. This is my second loss of a command. I have had hundreds of adventures, chances to save lives, and advance changes far beyond my most wild anticipations. I've been absorbed by the Borg collective and survived. That's a chance denied millions of innocent victims. The Borg still have a little grip on me. Now and then I can feel it. I never know how that will manifest itself. But if it does come forward again, it's not only myself at risk, it's any crew I'm commanding. Over 1,000 people who have faith in me to have a good grip on any situation. Am I being fair to them? And what about you, Will? Is any of this fair to you at all? Will you ever move on if I don't? As a matter of fact, I'm rather looking forward to life without that weight on my shoulders. There are other frontiers, you know. I've always felt drawn to archaeology. A quiet, sunlit dig somewhere, cool drink, big hat, shovel and a brush. Sand in your teeth, sunburn on your nose, calluses on your knees. And the wind in my hair. Oh, well, it's not all that bad. We've been cleared in the loss of the ship, and that's something. We're all free to accept new assignments, if we want them. After a moment, Riker joined his captain at the large viewing windows. And there was the reason the colony was still here, and the reason this starbase was still here. Beneath them was the border cutter Bozeman, docked here as a spacefaring museum. In its belly right now were precious museum collections of artifacts from famous lost ships, brought here to be appreciated by successive generations who otherwise would forget. 3 years ago, Riker had seen Captain Bateson absorb a great loss. He wondered if he was seeing the same resignation in his own captain now. Picard shifted his feet. I wonder how James Kirk handled losing his Enterprise. Why him all of a sudden? Not all of a sudden. I met him only briefly, yet he made an impression on me. For a man who took things so personally, what was it like to lose that first Enterprise? He ordered the destruct sequence, did you know that? No, I didn't know that. Yes. His ship had come to the end of a tether, but he still summoned up one last chance for his crew to live. They did live, by the way. All of them who were on that ship that day. And so did all of us. Yes, but somehow, even though it's happened to me again, I still can't imagine what it must have been like for him. Why don't you go ask him?
The captain turned away from the window, perplexed. Riker smiled.
The holodeck computer bank has all of his adventures programmed in as holoprograms. While he was on faculty at Starfleet Academy, Kirk cooperated in making all of his mission logs into programs and extrapolated on them for guest participation. I hadn't given it a thought. Well, you should. And, sir, are you ready to visit the new starship? After all, everyone's assuming. Suppose it's my duty to stoke the rumors, isn't it? Not rumors, sir. Hopes. Just the pitiful wishes of a group of ragtag misfits, alone in the universe but for each other, clinging to the forlorn, museful glimmerings of... I'm walking out the door, number one. You're not still talking, are you? No, sir, not me. Let's go to the right, sir. It's shorter.
Long, long years and many grinding sorrows. Was this the shining return of knights? No. This was the melancholy reappearance of coachmen in a not very impressive coach. No great Klingon warship, only an exploratory tank, now crammed full of samples and specimens, not even any unusual specimens. In the center seat on this dim and stuffy bridge, Commander Kozara sat in silence. A sharp-eyed patrol ship on the outer expanse had forced them to identify themselves. By now, everyone on Fortress Zagoda and half the Klingon command structure knew Kozara and his gloryless crew were finally coming home. The final tether drew into its mount and locked there. The expedition was over.
Galon caught a thin reflection of himself in the scratched frame of the sensor mount at the helm. Both he and Kozara were ragged now, aged by years and even more by this humiliating voyage. Galon glanced at his commander. Kozara was tight with his small hopes.
He may be here, Commander. Since our approach was not secret, he may have been notified. He will be here, Galon. My son Zaidan will be in that station to greet us. Forgiveness will be on his lips. We have done our jobs without question. We went where we were told without protest. Zaidan's open arms will welcome us back to honor.
Hope fired through Galon's chest. He saw each of the bridge crew swell a bit with the new chance, the flicker of logic in what Kozara said. They had done all that had been asked of them, done it without protest. Yes, they could return. The forward screen now showed a view of the far side of the station ring. They could see all the other ships being worked on or loading. They were three warships, so different from the one they'd piloted. How long ago was it now? These new ships were more massive, stronger. To look at them was a pain in the heart. Obviously, they'd missed a considerable rearmament of the Klingon fleet. Why was there a rearmament? What was happening in the galaxy today? Were they still young enough to build their lives again? Galon hardly knew anymore. He looked at Kozara. The commander sat as if sculpted into his seat. Would Kozara's son be here? The boy's life had been bedeviled by ridicule. He'd managed to become a construction engineer, making buildings, bridges, and spaceports like this one. Only two things had saved him from the crushing weight of his father's failure. One was his natural skill with architecture. The second was his father's only success, destruction of the Starfleet border ship that had ruined the assault on Starbase 12. Now the humiliation had been scrubbed clean, and Kozara could have a son again. Galon and the other members of the crew could begin again after 90 years. If they were not too old, perhaps they could have sons. And they were old, all of them. All were gray and crusty, their skull ridges pronounced and spiny. Their best days were past. If Zaidan were here, that would be a clue. There might be hope. Galon held his breath when the bridge direct access vault opened, and they were once again connected with others of the Empire. And there stood a young Klingon. Kozara moved on once powerful legs toward Zaidan. The commander straightened and squared his shoulders within the armor he no longer completely filled.
My son.
Zaidan slowly tilted his head to one side.
My pain. Why do you say this to your father? Do you know what happened while you were gone? Your one victory was snuffed out. That is what happened. Bateson is back.
Galon heard what Zaidan said, but could make no sense of it. The Federation ship had disappeared in a place where nothing could disappear. Kozara's face twisted.
We drove him into a planet. He is dead. He did not die. He did not plow into a planet. He went into a time anomaly. And he emerged 3 years ago to be escorted in trumpeting victory to Starbase 12 by none less than that petrified block, Jean-Luc Picard and the becursed Enterprise. Not only is Morgan Bateson back, but Morgan Bateson is famous. A hero. Bateson came forward in time with his ship, bearing the signs of battle and his crew intact. Since then, the Empire has been the laughingstock of the galaxy. An entire invasion was turned back by a single border ship and its 40-man crew. In Starfleet, to stumble on a pebble is now called a Kozara maneuver. Your one little victory against Morgan Bateson saved me from scraping animal dung from Imperial streets. Since he came back, do you know what life has been for me? No one wants a bridge, an outpost, a box, a sewage station built by Zaidan, son of Kozara. Now, this week comes the biggest embarrassment of all. The Federation is about to launch a new starship. It is the 6th Starship Enterprise, and the great Morgan Bateson is master of ceremonies. Is there no relief for me? Must everything you do haunt me this way?
Galon's eyes were boiling. The faces of the other crewmen were dusky with hopelessness. Their lives were over. Kozara tried so hard to think that the old scar in his skull turned darker.
His entire crew came through time with him, you said? Yes, so what? Then there is a chance. If his entire crew came through, then I am vindicated, because there is a Klingon operative on his staff. You are fantasizing, my father. There is no such person.
Kozara circled his command chair, a flicker of life in his eye.
I will kill Bateson, and I will smash the Federation's new starship at the same time. No. No, not enough. I will make the entire Federation hate what they have built. For all time, I will vilify the name of Enterprise. How will you and one miserable old ship destroy the new starship? I do not mean to destroy it. I mean to possess it.
Kozara swung around to face his bridge crew.
Listen, all of you. We will get a ship, a good ship. We will give the ship a name that will ring in history. Bateson is still young, but I have 90 more years' experience to use against him. We will snatch our names back from the gullet of shame. This I promise, I vow, I swear to my son. On the blood of our fathers, there will never be another Enterprise.
There she was, the Enterprise E. The new Sovereign-class ship was a creature of motion, as if she were going warp 5 standing still. Riker felt supremely privileged. He hadn't been in on the launch of the Enterprise D, or any other starship for that matter. Until this moment, looking out at the new ship, he hadn't realized what he'd missed. Judging by the spectator pods and media coaches that hovered at the ordered distance around the box dock, the whole Federation understood the significance of this new starship. He felt a little guilty as the pod he and Picard were using to approach the ship was cleared by the harbormaster. Unlike all those spectators, he and Picard could go right through the restricted postings and pilot up to the starship itself.
Captain, here she is.
Yes, Mr. Riker. Very pretty.
An inward groan rattled through Riker's chest. The captain simply stood there and eyed the ship sidelong as if unwilling to commit. Riker turned away from the captain and punched the clearance to dock. The pod would nuzzle itself in. Before either Riker or Picard could escape the pod, a smiling Deanna Troi flew toward them.
Welcome aboard, Captain.
Good morning, Counselor. Thank you for your eagerness.
Then Riker stepped out of Dr. Beverly Crusher's way as she moved across the deck and slipped her arm into Picard's.
Jean-Luc, so good to see you. Beverly, you're teasing me with that siren song, aren't you? Not teasing, openly flirting. Welcome aboard.
Riker again stepped out of the way. There was engineer Geordi LaForge, his dark features glossy from the jog down the long corridor, and his cybernetic eyes shining with emotion that shouldn't have been showing there. He plowed between the two women and grabbed the captain's hand and started pumping.
Captain, good morning. How totally unexpected. All right, where's Data?
He's right behind me, sir.
Data, what took you so long?
I was distracted by the wonderful music coming from the rec deck. Someone is in there playing Smoky Mountain music. It is so down-home and toe-tapping. Do you all not love it, too?
For years, Data had been an ideal android, completely cool, a little curious. Recently, though, A chip in his positronic brain gave Data something that Riker had thought unprogrammable. But apparently, it had been done. Data had emotions. Now he was as human as any of them, and about three times more naive. Captain Picard nodded.
The irrepressible Commander Data. I suppose there's something to be said for banjos and fiddles. Now, what is this? What are all of you doing aboard this ship? Don't tell me you're signed on already.
Crusher pulled him a few steps forward.
Just hedging our bets. Don't gripe.
Crusher and Troy angled the captain into the open corridor of the big ship. Riker, LaForge, and Data followed. The corridor was glossy and smelled new. The braces and door frames had a certain streamlined liquidity, sculpted beyond function into an art form. They strode directly through the lower body of the ship to the main engine room. Here, their welcoming committee of one was right inside the entrance, a rotund, silver-haired gentleman with a black mustache and ruddy cheeks.
Captain Picard, welcome aboard, sir.
Captain Scott, as we both live and breathe.
Sir, welcome aboard the new lass. Hope you're as well as I look. We expected you a month back. Poor Data's been just twitching.
Riker poked in between Data and LaForge.
How did you get assigned here, Captain Scott? Hold a string or two, lad. Captain Bateson and I are longtime friends, and I mean long-time friends.
Montgomery Scott had been confused and out of place when he'd first been rescued from transporter stasis. But apparently his talents hadn't been buried by misfortune. Riker admired him for his resilience, but found Scott's ability to fit into this starship somehow annoying at a time when Riker and his captain were having trouble finding their own places. He glanced at Picard. He could tell that the captain wasn't looking forward to the tour. The engine room panels parted again, and for an instant, Riker thought they'd be offered a little distraction. But no such luck. The person who appeared in the doorway would hardly be a relief. Morgan Bateson. He hadn't changed much in the past 3 years. Hardly at all, in fact. Still had the neat musketeer's beard, not so different from Riker's. Bateson had his eyes down at a pad as he strode in and paused in the middle of the wide deck. Bateson didn't notice them as he stood there in the middle of the engineering deck writing. When he'd finished, he instantly noticed the group of Picardians.
Well, what's this? Captain Picard, what a nice surprise. Beautiful, isn't she? Quite a ship Starfleet's got here. How long have you been aboard?
Less than 5 minutes, Captain. She's lovely.
Bateson's animated face shifted instantly from joy to sympathy.
I'm so very sorry about your starship. A great adventure with a great ending, though. Your crew made a safe planetfall, at least. Fall is one way to put it. Oh, sorry. Look, Picard, if you don't mind waiting a few minutes for your tour, I have to pass along these schematics to the engineers on board the Roderick. She's being built in the other dock. Gotta have some fighting ships ready, you know, with the Klingons making so many angry noises these days.
Picard faced his former command officers.
All right, I'm done with you. I'm going over here to visit Captain Bateson. Captain Picard, let you and I go off somewhere and be captain-like.
Everyone went their own way except for Riker, Troy, and Crusher. Beverly Crusher folded her long arms.
It's eerie the way those two get along. Bateson's a little obsessive. Worries me. He's been all over the ship. He's micromanaging everything. And he's got the ship littered with his own crew from the Bozeman.
Riker nodded.
Bateson said he would make it his cause in life to give them a future so they wouldn't fixate on the past. He found out a new ship was being built and figured this was one way to get in on the ground floor or something. Doesn't surprise me. He's trying to jumpstart a whole new life for himself and his crew.
Riker looked from Crusher to Troy.
All right, ladies, let's hear it. What do you think is going on?
Troy glanced at Crusher, then spoke.
We think he's jockeying for command.
I don't see how. He was 90 years out of date 3 years ago. 3 years isn't enough to catch up, at least I don't think so.
There's also talk of Captain Riker.
Riker stopped their speculations.
Picard wants it.
Crusher reached for Riker's arm.
When did he say it? Tell us his exact words.
Riker swiveled to one side.
Sorry, I've got to go analyze the system.
Troy batted Crusher's hand away from Riker's arm, and they all turned together, looking like a vaudeville show. Captain Picard approached, scolding them with his glare.
You're a sight, all of you. Captain Bateson's waiting for you on the other side of engineering. He's going to conduct your tour. I've been called away to Admiral Farrar's office.
It took all of Riker's self-control to keep from clapping the captain on the shoulder.
That's gotta be it.
Crusher was openly gleeful.
Jean-Luc, it's wonderful.
And Deanna Troi beamed.
The ship is ours.
As Captain Picard entered Admiral Farrow's office, he wished he could avoid what was to come, for he had no idea what answer he would give to the options posed. Farrow stood up to greet him, then gestured toward the plush antique velvet couch.
Good morning, Captain Picard. Have you seen the new starship? Just came from there. She's quite a work of art. I haven't had the chance to examine the technology quite yet, but...
Ah, but you'll get to it, I know.
Admiral, please put me out of my misery, will you?
Yes. So sorry, Jean-Luc. On behalf of the Admiralty, with all our congratulations and appreciation, I'm pleased to offer you the rank of Rear Admiral. Now, you don't need to accept right away. In fact, we'd prefer you didn't. We have a thing or two bubbling in Cardassian space. You might like to take charge of those, leading a small team to Cardassia Prime. I'm not a commando, Admiral. Why choose me for this? We've been contacted by a Cardassian with whom we've developed a relationship. This contact confirmed some things that have only been suspected until now, and she asked for you by name. Admiral, this is entirely a mystery to me.
Farrow handed Picard a data pad.
It'll all make sense once you read this. Should I give you some time to absorb this? No, sir. May I only say I'm sure Will Riker will make a superb captain for the new starship.
Yes, I know he would.
But command will be going to Captain Bateson for the ship's launch cruise. Sir, I genuinely believe Mr. Riker deserves command.
He well may, but it doesn't matter right now. Bateson has massive amounts of seniority.
That's because of a quirk of time travel.
It was you yourself who recommended Starfleet give him full seniority consideration. Besides that, his record is not only spotless but exemplary. And he's a hero in this sector. Starfleet can do worse than to recognize its own heroes, can it not, Captain? Or shall I say, Admiral? Don't say it yet.
The heady thrill of a promotion was completely lost on Picard, totally vanquished by the idea that Bateson and not Riker would have command of the Enterprise E. Farrow said,
Now, let us discuss the mission Starfleet has for you. A mission for a captain without a ship.
The officers' guest quarters aboard the Enterprise E was more like a hotel lobby than a ship's briefing room. But Picard knew that meeting with Riker, Troi, and Crusher in a briefing room would be strangely inappropriate today. He faced his officers huddled around a glass table.
Thank you all for being here. Before you all pop from curiosity and anticipation, I shall cut to the bottom line. I have not been offered command of the new Enterprise. Command for the ship's shakedown cruise has been given to Morgan Bateson.
Riker digested the captain's words with a heavy heart. Troi burst out.
I don't believe it. Morgan Bateson is 90 years out of date. He can't possibly be qualified.
Picard gave her an icy glare.
You're mistaken about that.
Captains of the past had to think fast, and that's what Bateson has done. Bateson may not be technically up to snuff, but I'd be more circumspect about his command instincts.
Crusher held out one hand.
The shakedown crews? Then Bateson's in temporary command, right?
It is, in fact, temporary. But temporary status is usually only a formality. I've already given him my congratulations. When I spoke to him, he asked me to carry a request to you, Will.
Startled out of his misery, Riker looked up.
What kind of request? He'd like you to come along with him on his shakedown cruise as first officer. Bateson already has a first officer. He doesn't need two.
No, but he does need someone familiar with current technology, star territory, and spacefaring. He's no fool. He knows what he doesn't know.
When I went into Admiral Farrow's office, he informed me that Captain Bateson would be taking command for now. I went strangely numb, no feeling at all except perhaps anger on Mr. Riker's behalf. Then the Admiral started talking about something else, and I forgot all about the starship. He's given me an assignment. I've accepted.
Crusher blurted out.
The Admiralty?
No. I'm still a captain for now, and without a desk job. It's a mission. Now that the Klingons are making trouble with Cardassia, and the peace in this quadrant is broken, the Cardassians are motivated to cooperate with the Federation. We have an opportunity we haven't had before. My mission is to go into Cardassian space and reclaim our MIAs, our missing in action.
Beverly Crusher leaned forward.
Federation Nationals? Are you serious?
You mean the Cardassians are holding Federation citizens as prisoners? Not just Federation citizens. Starfleet personnel. Over the past 3 years, the USS Durant and several Starfleet personnel have been classified as missing in or near Cardassian space. Also, there have been some merchant vessels and one satellite tender, the Tuscany, gone missing under suspicious circumstances. The Cardassians insist there are no prisoners, but I know otherwise. They also claimed I wasn't there, being held, being tortured, and I certainly was there. I intend to take a private vessel, a non-Starfleet ship, go into Cardassian territory, and confront Ghul Madred personally.
Beverly Crusher gripped the edge of the table.
Jean-Luc, you can't, after what he did to you.
I know what he did to me. That's how I know what he's doing to our missing people. I'm going.
Silence fell. No one knew what to say. Finally, Riker spoke.
Sir, permission to go with you into Cardassian space. That's appreciated, Number One. But this isn't the Federation Volunteer Corps. I expect you to go with Bateson cheerfully on the shakedown cruise. And the next time you're offered command, take it.
Startled, Riker clamped his mouth shut on anything else he might have said. Beside him, the two women stared at Picard. Then Troy spoke.
Captain, we've always been a family as well as an assignment.
The captain riveted Troy with a long stare.
We're not a family, Counselor. Starfleet isn't a social club. Our ship is gone and we must expect changes. Mr. Riker has been given an assignment where his talents are needed. You, Mr. Data, and Mr. LaForge are also assigned to the Enterprise E. And I expect you to serve Captain Bateson with every bit the loyalty and energy I have enjoyed from you.
Crusher folded her arms, and Troy sank back next to her. Picard continued.
Captain Bateson has assigned 39 members of his Bozeman crew to the starship. The starship will also be manned by over 300 additional starship crewmen from, well, our time.
Riker frowned.
300? That ship takes over 1,000. Not for a shakedown cruise. Only department heads and technical specialists will be on board for now. Captain Scott will remain on board as chief engineer, and Mr. LaForge will be assistant chief. Counselor, Captain Bateson doesn't want a ship's counselor on duty, so you'll be part of the medical staff. Mr. Data, well, he can do the work of almost the entire science staff. Dr. Crusher, on the other hand, will be going with me into Cardassian space.
Crusher let out a sigh of relief, and Riker tried one more request.
Captain, at least take Data with you.
No. Mr. Data is physically far stronger than any Cardassian or human, and he's quite obviously an android. He'd present the wrong kind of intimidation. However, I do intend to take some intimidation along with me. I've already contacted Captain Sisko at Deep Space Nine. I'm going to stop off there and borrow Commander Worf.
Crusher challenged him.
You're trying to appear neutral, and you're taking a Klingon into Cardassian space?
I want a neutral ship, but this is not a neutral mission.
As he spoke, Picard went to a closet and removed an already packed and strapped suitcase and a Starfleet duffel bag.
Now, listen to me. Morgan Bateson is a man with different priorities than you and I have ever known. No matter how much we may disapprove, he believes in himself more than the structure of Starfleet. Captains of his time had to. You can learn something from a man like that. The Klingons have been quiet for nearly 80 years, but they've been a smoldering volcano. Now the top is blowing off. They've always been resource poor, angry at having been contained by the Federation, and now they've found reasons to be our enemies again. Whether we like it or not, Morgan Bateson's attitude about Klingons is back in fashion. He is the captain of the Enterprise now. I expect you to treat him accordingly. Mr. Riker, Counselor, you both report to Captain Bateson at 1100. Doctor, get your things and report to Captain Reynolds aboard the Merchant Explorer Half Moon. Take whatever you may need for a rescue mission. We leave in an hour.
Aboard the new starship, Commander William T. Riker was greeted by two young officers.
Mr. Riker, I'm Mike Dennis. This is Wiz Dayton. Welcome to the Enterprise E.
Riker nodded.
Report ship status, Mr. Dennis. Sir, we're underway at impulse speed. Course is Port Interspace Standard on Lane Delta India Tango away from Starbase 12. Trying to shake all the confetti off the hull from the launch celebrations. The department heads are preparing to report hyperlight readiness.
Very well, Lieutenant.
We'll show you to your quarters, sir. Then the captain has requested that you join him on the bridge.
Riker followed the officers, knowing they were two of Bateson's original crew. That made him uneasy. Then a voice sounded from inside the open door of a tool locker.
Hey. Hi, bud.
Something extraordinary occurred. A drunken man, reeling unashamedly and clutching what looked like an antique silver flask, piled out of an open doorway and threw an arm around Wiz Dayton.
Here he is. First there was man, then there was woman, then there was wizard.
Dayton shrugged unhappily.
Hi, Gabe. Take it easy, okay?
Riker stepped back a couple of paces just to get a better look. This was Gabriel Bush. This hollow-eyed shadow of a human being was Bateson's upright first officer from the Bozeman?
Mr. Bush, are you all right?
Oh, I'm good. I'm wicked good. I could tell you stories. Hey, you want to have some of this?
He waved the silver flask in front of Riker's face.
What is it? This? Rum, what else? I'll share it with you. Later.
Bush wandered off down the corridor and disappeared into a lab. The three watched him go, and Wiz Dayton spoke as the lab door slid shut.
Sir, he's been like that since we got to this century, give or take 6 months. He was about to get married when we ended up lost. We all just loved Ruby. That's the girl he was going to marry. Gabe was the happiest man in the whole sector.
He's like that, even after 3 whole years?
Dennis and Dayton looked at each other uncomfortably. Evidently, there was more. Dayton began.
Mr. Bush looked into what happened to Ruby. It wasn't very nice. She spent years looking for us, hiring ships, scratching resources together, buying search services, getting fleeced, getting older.
She finally used up all her resources except a single ship that she took out by herself. She had word that Gabe was a prisoner of the Klingons, and she was determined to get him back. She headed straight for the Klingon border.
The Klingons got her?
Yes. Captured, tried as a spy, and sentenced to Rurapenthi prison planet. The Federation tried to get her back, but she had trespassed on restricted territory. Anyway, the Klingons were about to let her go on a technicality, but then they found out who she was, the fiancé of the Bozeman's first officer.
The Bozeman, the ship that wrecked their invasion and sent the High Council into a tailspin.
That's right. After that, they sent Ruby back, all right, in 10 small boxes, the same number of dignitaries purged from the High Council.
Dennis picked up the story from Dayton.
When Gabe checked on what had happened to her, it was a nice, clear set of pictures in the files. He just sat there for days staring at the monitor. He was just eaten up with guilt.
With new sorrow and empathy, Riker looked down the now empty corridor. Wiz Dayton followed his gaze.
I guess you can see, sir, why we protect Mr. Bush. Captain Bateson's been running interference for him, making sure nobody finds out. All of us on board, we all understand. And he does do his job, usually. Please don't say anything, sir.
As the two men led him in silence to his new quarters, Riker struggled to decide just how to handle this. As first officer, it fell upon him to handle problems of the crew, not quite this personal, but certainly if those problems affected the ship. And this would. On the other hand, his responsibility was much more the crew than other senior officers. Bush was still a senior officer, and thus was more the captain's concern. By the time Riker was introduced to his quarters, then was escorted to the bridge of the starship, he was solidly grumpy about the way Morgan Bateson ran his command. Lieutenant Dennis led him on to the sweeping bridge of the new Enterprise. Each brace, chair, and support was designed to mimic the streamlined, forward-leaning outer configuration of the ship's hull, making each station look as if it were about to leap off a cliff and fly. Dennis immediately went to his station, leaving Riker to stand in the turbolift vestibule and look about in privacy. There were some people here, a few officers. Captain Bateson was standing just over there on the port side, going over something on a pad with an engineer. Riker stepped down deck and strode on the plush carpet to where Deanna Troi worked on the environmental control panel.
Deanna? I thought you were assigned to medical.
I am, Will. I'm adjusting temp control for some of the lower decks. It's been a little haywire. We can't find the problem.
Deanna, have you seen Mr. Bush?
Yes, I've seen him. I think he saw two or three of me as well.
What do you make of all that?
She kept working on the panel so no one would notice their lowered voices.
I think he's sunken into severe depression, but the captain won't let me practice as a counselor. And to tell you the truth, Will, I don't think there's much I could do for Mr. Bush. He's been cured of the alcoholism several times. He's not simply physically dependent. He's just grief-stricken. I'm not sure I'd prescribe much more than he's getting right now. Simple hard work.
She glanced across the bridge to where Captain Bateson still had his back to them.
It's his fault. He keeps protecting Bush. He thinks only shipmates can help shipmates. When I disagree, he just brings up our loyalty to Captain Picard and to each other. And what can I say? Oh, Will, we all tried so hard to get assigned here. We assumed Captain Picard.
That's enough, Deanna. Guess I'd better report in. I'll talk to you later.
Riker broke away from her and crossed the fresh carpet to where the captain was looking at controls and comparing them to a pad. When Bateson nodded and handed the pad back to the engineer, he turned, saw Riker, and his animated face beamed.
Oh, well, welcome aboard. I appreciate your deciding to accept my request. Excuse me. Bridge to Main Engineering. Captain Scott, Engineer LaForge, Commander Data, join us up here, please. And tell Gabe to get that brandy-soaked carcass topside pronto. Captain out.
Without waiting for acknowledgements, the captain took Riker's arm and strolled with him around the upper deck.
Well, I always want you to be honest. I'm counting on that. I won't learn anything from polite deceptions. I know you were holding out for command of the Enterprise, and I suppose you'd rather hate my guts right now. In spite of that, I'm going to gamble on your decent sense of duty and ask you to serve for a few months to usher me and my men through the shakedown period. What do you say, Will? Are you too bitter to do what's good for Starfleet?
Annoyed, Riker managed to disengage his elbow from Bateson's grip.
Sir, I believe I've already answered that question with my presence here.
All right. Noted. You got me there. I just had that speech all worked out, and I didn't want to waste it.
Understood, sir. And it was a first-rate speech, too.
Thank you. I thought so.
Then Bateson's eyes narrowed.
Attention all hands. Propulsion and science stations confirm ready for warp speed.
A shiver of excitement went up Riker's spine in spite of his effort not to like all this. He did like it, damn it. The launch of a new starship. Captain Scott rolled out of the turbolift, beaming happily, followed by Geordi LaForge and Data. Riker was stung by the absence of Captain Picard, Beverly Crusher, and Worf. Would they ever be together again? A few seconds later, two engineers piled out of the secondary turbolift beside the main screen. Behind them, out sloshed Gabe Bush, with Wiz Dayton guiding him along. Riker suddenly realized what was going on. Bateson had his whole bridge crew from the Bozeman here now, as well as all onboard officers from Enterprise D. Bateson looked around.
Department staff, I'll take your reports now.
Captain Scott, Geordi LaForge, Data, Troy, and Wolf all reported that their departments were go for warp speed. Finally, Bateson smiled at the bridge crew with genuine warmth.
Thank you, all of you, for having more faith in me than I deserve. Mr. LaForge, how about a little nostalgia? Would you like to take your original post as navigator for the first watch?
Yes, sir. I'd like that very much.
Bateson motioned to the seat on the right of the command chair.
Mr. Riker, your place is right here.
Then Bateson motioned to the chair on the left.
Gabe, I want you right here beside me, too.
Not nearly as jolly as the last time Riker had seen him, Gabe Bush had obviously been sobered up a little by his shipmates. Twitching with self-consciousness, he flushed in humiliation and took his seat. Then Bateson took his place in the captain's chair.
Captain's log, stardate 5021.9. Captain Morgan Bateson recording. Log first engagement of matter-antimatter propulsion system, USS Enterprise, NCC-1701E. Give us warp factor 1.
On the screen, space blew into gorgeous distortion. The Freeze Posnikov sector blurred into some kind of painting, and then they were going faster than Einstein thought anyone ever could. As the USS Enterprise E pressed her armored shoulders forward into hyperlight speed, she was indeed a beauty, inside and out. She was a grand ship. Only time and trial would tell if she was also a great ship. When they'd settled down and most people's eyes had dried up some, Will Riker turned to Captain Bateson.
What's our destination, sir?
We're going right out to the far edge of the Typhon Expanse, our old hunting grounds.
Captain, that's directly adjacent to the Klingon neutral zone. It's considered hostile space. The Federation recommends that all shipping remain clear of the expanse.
Yes, I know that, Mr. Riker.
Bateson tilted his head and surveyed the officers of the Enterprise E.
What's the matter with all of you? You look like a raft of seals. We have a mission to undertake.
A mission, sir? On a shakedown cruise?
That's right. War games, Mr. Riker. In preparation for that, I've ordered shields reduced to 50% and phasers powered down to 10%.
Captain, reducing phaser power while we maneuver just minutes away from the Klingon Empire?
We have to talk. Mr. Riker, this isn't command by committee. We don't have to talk.
Well, sir, we're going to do just that.